Hi, Linda.
Hi, Andy.
Something got messed up in my... I no longer hear the ringing when I call you on FaceTime. It still records it, but I can, for some reason, no longer hear it. So I just sit in silence until I hear your voice.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that the most fascinating thing you've ever heard? What an interesting opening.
Does it pick up in the recording?
Yeah, it records just fine. I just just can't hear it through my headphones. Don't know why.
It's a ghost.
Selectively deaf.
I'm just standing here looking at my clock. Have I ever told you about my clock superstition?
You have not told me about your clock superstition, and I am buckled up and ready to hear about it.
I think I break clocks. I think, Andy, and I'm going to say this with all seriousness.
All right,
just so
I won't laugh.
Well, I'll be able to hear how ridiculous it sounds. I think that I have an effect on the electromagnetic fields around me. I'm already having a hard time keeping it together in a way that somehow affects timepieces.
Just timepieces.
Yes. I have had so many clocks break. Like, I went through a phase a few years ago where I couldn't, like, I would buy a clock, bring it home, it would break. I would order a clock from the internet, it would get there, it would be broken. I had an ex-boyfriend who, like, got me a clock, brought it from Amsterdam, and it, like, shattered while it was on its way here. And right now I'm just watching the second hand on this clock. It's still ticking, but it keeps going forward and back and forward and back. And so the clock is just stuck at 1:45.
Just to cover all of our bases here, to ask the obvious question, you are aware that most clocks need batteries, right?
Well, yeah, and so this clock currently, it probably just needs a new battery, but it's weird that, like, the second hand is still ticking. It's just, like, getting confused. It's, like, it's later, it's the past. It's the future, it's the past.
I feel like I've seen clocks break like that. It's like, you know, there's this mechanism in there, I guess, where the second hand, like, ticks over some notch or ridge in a gear to get to the next second. What's actually happening is it doesn't have enough power to get over that edge, so it gets right before it would tick over, and then it just flops back. Right before it would tick over, flops back. Because I think what you're describing, I feel like I've seen this before.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I think that I've gotten through my clock phase. It was really, like, a couple of years ago. But it was strange. It was weird. It was like any clock in my house that I would attempt to have would either literally shatter or just stop functioning.
Now, have you heard the story of the young boy? He must be old now because this is a long time ago. That would every computer he came in touch with would just break.
What?
Yeah. Let's see if I can find.
See, that's what I'm talking about. And so, like, what happened is when I was talking about this years ago, somebody told me that there's actually, like, a subreddit for people who think that they, like, have an effect on clocks. And so
there's a subreddit. That just sounds like a subreddit for people who think they can control time with their brain.
Well, no, it wasn't like that. It was like something about electromagnetic fields that some people's, like, energy is, I don't know. I can't even, like, regurgitate the nonsense.
All right, here we go. Digga, 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 digga. 12-year-old Magneto Man breaks every computer he touches.
Wow.
Confirming our belief that some people are just bad with computers, a boy named Joe Falciatano III from Pulaski, New York, seems to have simply the worst luck ever, and some think it could do with an overly magnetized touch.
Wow.
Courtesy of Engadget. So I'll send you this article you can read about perhaps your long-lost brother, Magneto Man, who's breaking computers, you're breaking clocks.
Maybe a Magneto Woman.
Yeah, it's not impossible, Linda. I mean, the world is a big, complicated place with, like, a lot of wild shit happening, like, all the time. So, you know, I'm not putting anything out of the realm of possibility. You might just break clocks.
I'm like an X-Man, and that's my lame-ass power.
Have you considered, have you watched a lot of Star Trek in your life?
No, I think that motorcycles follow me when I'm doing this podcast, though, because it's just hilarious that there's another one right here. Star Trek?
Yeah. Have you watched much Star Trek or any Star Trek?
I mean, I watched it when I was a kid at my grandma's house. I remember that for some reason. But no, I haven't been, like, a serious Star Trek person.
Well, a recurring bit on Star Trek is the idea of temporal distortions, which is just a little space where time gets all flippity-floppity. So maybe you got a temporal distortion following you around.
Temporal distortion?
Yeah.
Can you break that down for me? What does that mean?
No, I literally can't because it's made up. It doesn't exist.
Basically, in
Star Trek, this ship will be flying through space, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, all the men on board grew big beards. It turns out we went through a temporal distortion, and 6 months passed, and somehow we're all still alive, and then they investigate that for a long time.
The costume department got bored, and they're like, can you make us something?
It was one of the magical tools they would invoke to not explain why they were doing something. Like, yeah, sure, temporal distortion.
I love that.
That's why this character is coming back, even though they've been long dead, and they're supposed to be a child. Now they're an old man, or whatever.
Yeah. Nice.
How are you? How are you handling your emotional whiplash after coming back from EXO? You had a much longer. I felt like I was a little whiplashed coming back to society, but you had a much longer trip than I, with multiple different destinations.
Oh yeah.
Multiple different friend groups and heavy friend conversations. And how are you handling it? Are you hanging in there?
I'm okay. I came back. I had some flight problems on the way back. I won't bore people with missed connection flights and stuff, but
you gotta get on Craigslist missed connections and find other people that missed their flight
and find my Delta flight. That'd be funny. So I did like sprint through the airport, made it to the very last airplane that was going to leave for New York that night. So I didn't have to sleep in the Minneapolis airport, thank goodness. And I made it back home. The next morning, I woke up dead.
And I woke up and the end.
Yeah. And Mark was there. He made me coffee and I like cried about something, but it wasn't really anything. It was just like, I'm exhausted. Being a person is hard.
Being a person is hard.
Yeah. But it's all good. I ended up going climbing that night again.
Is that fun. When you texted me that picture from the bouldering gym?
I texted you a picture of the bouldering gym, but that's not the one that I was at. But yes, that was that day. And my little fingies were too sore, and my forearms were too sore. But I did a little bit.
Do you think this is going to reinvigorate your love of bouldering?
A little bit. The gym that I went to, it was a lot of fun, but I remembered, like, why I don't love going there. It's just, like, too far out of the way.
Mm. Yeah.
I really think that, like, proximity is a huge part of working out. Like, you need a gym that's, like, right around the corner.
That's been my experience, too, because I don't even really love or fully support CrossFit, but it is the one gym that is close to me that is open at 6 a.m. every day. So, there I am.
It makes a noise.
Yeah.
So, last night, I went to bed at 9 o'clock. And that's very early for me. I know that's just like peak Andy time.
That's
like, you're probably already in bed.
That's my normal bedtime, basically. I was in bed at 9 o'clock last night, I can confirm.
Nice. And I just listened to Hello from the Magic Tavern, zoned out, went to sleepies. It was great.
So you feel like you're all caught up now, back on your normal rhythms and routines?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, I went to therapy today. I haven't seen my therapist for like 6 weeks because he was on vacation. It was nice to reconnect with him.
I feel like I need to find another therapist for myself.
Why?
I feel like it's a thing I would benefit from. I mean, Hillary and I go to a couples therapist, which I think I mentioned on the show a couple times. But it can sometimes feel like, this is kind of like me going to therapy, but it's really not. It's very different. My own thing.
It is.
But, I mean, the process of getting life insurance, I don't want to have to explain another medical appointment to a life insurance adjuster, so I'm going to hold off until I have life insurance. Then I will go.
You think that would affect your life insurance policy?
I'm not sure if it would affect the rate, but they ask you questions and you have to explain everything. Yeah, it's horrible.
That's so fucked up.
No,
and what's fucked up is that's thought of as like a negative thing. Like, I think that it ensures that you're not going to die.
I mean, all the actuaries go and stick it in their actuarial tables and it spits out probabilities of my early death. I don't know how it factors in. But I don't want to have to explain another one. So I will explicitly withhold care from myself until I have life insurance. Life insurance is a fucking it's like, I mean, all insurance is a form of gambling, really,
right,
when you think about it. But life insurance is the most baldly, blatantly just a form of gambling. It's just like,
oh yeah,
it's just like, dear company, I bet you $1 million that I die before I turn 60. And they're
right,
like, okay, we'll take those odds, but you got to, like, chip in this much to the pot.
Right. And it's also so cheap that it's worth it to, like, max out whatever it is. Like, I have mindset so that if I die, like, basically, my sister gets $2 million to, like, give to my niece or whatever, like, to put in a college fund or, I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know what the actual number is, but it's a lot. It's like, yeah, whatever. Like, if I die, that'll suck for some people and suck them up.
Oh, God. Anyway, it's bad. Life insurance.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a person is hard, like you said. Gotta do it. Gotta have the insurance for the life stuff.
It is. And I'm on my way to improv right now. It's my first class of the season.
Oh, we got a new theme here. Walking to improv instead of walking to spin.
Yeah.
When is the last time you were actually in an improv class? I know it's been a minute.
Oh my God, it's been like over a year, Andy.
Over a year?
Yeah.
So are you not going to know anybody there? Is it going to be all new faces to you?
All brand new people that I've never met in my life, probably.
I cannot believe you have the social energy to do that just a few days after getting back from XO.
Right?
So impressed, and you're remarkable.
Yeah, but I'm really excited about it. Like, I think that I needed that full day yesterday of, like, laying down and doing nothing. And I feel pretty good about it.
And this is, like, the last class in the structured curriculum, right?
Right.
After this, you just get on SNL. That's the whole deal.
Yeah, that's it. You just go to UCB 101, 201, 301, 401, and then SNL.
Yep, SNL right after that.
Yeah. Not a lot of people make it that far. So
401 class is very hard to graduate from. The
dropout
rate is sky high.
Yeah. Speaking of comedy stuff, I just saw that SNL just finally brought on their first ever Asian cast member.
I saw that as well, and I haven't watched SNL since I was in high school, and I didn't realize they had never had an Asian cast member, which is shocking and horrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. They're pretty far behind.
Yeah, I don't think I can, like, celebrate that and be like, good for you, SNL, because it's just bad.
Yeah, it's not a good for you. It's a, really? Oh, God, yeah. They haven't had that yet.
I wonder.
That is fucked up.
Here's a bleak thought. I wonder if that factors into the decision-making in the corridors of power of places like that. Because the fact that they had their first Asian cast member drew attention to the fact that they had never before had an Asian cast member, which I otherwise would have never known.
Well, there are, like, a whole bunch of people who are, like, always all up SNL's butt about how not diverse it is.
Yeah, I'm sure if that's your world, you're more plugged in than I am. I'm not attached to it. But yeah, I wonder. I mean, they're probably subscribing to the old, you know, no press. All press is good press. No such thing as bad press thing.
Right.
Or even if people are like, can't believe it took 150 years or whatever.
Yeah.
People are still looking at SNL and might go watch, you know, this new cast member.
Right. So we're going to go watch it. And then the show wins.
And then they get to sell you more Tide Pods or whatever.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Their number one agenda, more Tide Pods.
Yeah. Linda, I finished Jenny O'Dell's book already.
What?
Yeah. It's a really good book. Everyone should read it.
I bought it. And I bought the audio version. And
ooh.
I listened to the first 4 minutes of it before being like, you know, I really want to listen to the Magic Tavern right now.
Yeah, this is going to be hard to take
my ear holes.
Take your vegetables when there's a Magic Tavern podcast right around the corner.
It's like 800 episodes ready to listen to.
Yeah. Is Jenny reading it in the audiobook, or is there some other voice actor?
No, it just seems like some. I think that's one thing that I didn't really like about it, the voice in it. It's just very robotic, you know? And I hate it when it's, like, devoid of emotion or you can just tell when the person who wrote it is reading it. Like, I loved like Amy Poehler's book because she reads it and you can tell, like, she labored over every word in that thing, so she knows exactly when to enunciate,
right?
Which
she's also a fantastic performer. I can sympathize with authors that are not great performers and are like, no, I don't want to record my own audiobook, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, for people that don't know, I mean, so Jenny Odell is a author, artist. She spoke at EXO, one of the last talks, and the title of her talk and also her book was How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy. And I have to admit that when I saw the talk and book title, I was like, all right, fine. Here comes another person that's going to be like, put down your phone, kids. Like, log off. Get off Twitter. It's bad for you. And I was, you know, whatever. Like, I understand why people are all kind of preaching that particular gospel, but I didn't think I need to hear it again. But her book is so much more than that. It's really, really special.
Yeah, tell me. What are some of the main takeaways?
Well, one of the things is that she says early on in the book that she, you know, kind of changed her mind, and who she was as a person changed over the course of writing the book. And she thinks of it not as a, like, communication of concrete information from one person to another via a book, but instead like a conversation. And I think it reads that way. It doesn't, like, there's very few concrete takeaways. It's not imminently practical, but nonetheless, it makes some really kind of powerful connections between things. Like, basically, she kind of manages to weave basic, like, you know, tech competency and, like, being a person in the world where technology is dominating everything, and weave that in with, like, collective action and, like, workers' rights over the ages, and weave that in with art history, and weave that in with, like, environmentalism and, like, the patriarchy and, like, the problems with capitalism, and just kind of, like, manages to connect everything in this, like, very beautiful, poetic way. Which I find very compelling. And I should say, too, like, part of the reason I found it compelling is that the position she's writing from and, like, her perspective is not normally how I think about the world, which is to say that she's talking about the world exists as it is, somewhat, you know, unchangeable, somewhat immutable. We're not going to, like, unroll technology. We're not going to, like, go back to the Stone Ages. Like, this is just the reality we live in now. And the book is very much about how you as an individual can kind of, like, stand against the tide of that, and about how not engaging in some of the more, like, parasitic social patterns online is actually, like, an act of resistance against capitalism, and it's, like, a way of, like, passively resisting the status quo. Which is, it's all very much about the individual. It's, like, what you can do yourself. And it talks about collective action a little bit, too. But I'm very much, like, a systems person, right? Like, if I'm reading about a problem, I like to read about the big systemic structural decisions that have been made that cause a problem, and not, you know, get down to the level of, like, why did this specific person do this specific thing, which I always find too complicated to kind of unravel, and instead look at the big picture and look at the bell curve of what most people do in a given situation and kind of understand that from that perspective. So it was very good for me, I think, to read such a well-articulated vision of the world that is very much about what you as an individual can do to remain sane and not fall to pieces in this hell world we live in, this fucking hellscape.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I will say, like, I don't know, I would never want to suggest that I think that, like, XXX should change, or that the types of talks should change. And I think that, like, a lot of the talks that happened were really similar to this part of Twitter that I try to avoid, where, like, there is a lot of, like, back and forth bullying and responding to that bullying and being right and arguing with people who just you can't argue with, like, and anyways, it just seemed like it was a little bit of that side that just, like, tends to stress me out to a point where I just don't engage, you know. And I think that there are a lot of advocates there who are, like, who do engage because they feel like it's important. If you don't engage, then, like, nothing will ever change, and you have to fight for what you know is right. And so I equally, like, look up to those people and also, like, slunch down in my seat and I'm like, oh, but it's scary and it's stressful. And so I just kind of, like, want to be, like, the person who's, like, interjecting little drips of happiness into people's feeds from time to time. But yeah, like, what did this woman say, or is there anything in their book about, like, how far to engage with the community that you, like, really can't even reason with?
No, she didn't really talk at all about, like, bullying or the alt-right or, like, internet trolls. Like, it was, that's the thing, is like, I the title is accurate in a sense, but at least to my ear, like to what I'm attuned to, I think I heard similar things to what you're describing here, where like, I don't want another book telling me how to deal with internet trolls, or, you know, tell me not to read the comments. Like, I don't need that, because that's so ingrained in me already. It's not something that's useful to me. And this book is kind of 0% about that. Like, there's no part of it where it's like, here's how to engage in online communities. There's no like prescriptive advice. It's really like, so I mean, it describes the nature of the attention economy and the sort of structures that have, it does talk about the systemic reasons that the internet exists as it does, and social networks on the internet exist as they do, and why they're designed as they are, and is critical of that, which is very helpful. And then, like, I think very helpfully, it kind of, the book is like, all right, so here's all the problems with technology. What if we just assume that the best thing to do is completely disengage? And then it actually like goes into the history of various groups of people in time that have made the choice to disengage from technology or civilization or like the idea of hegemonic progress, and talks about why those attempts generally don't work. And like, you know, it talks about everything from, you know, performance artist that, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with performance artist whose name I can't pronounce, but he's this, I believe, Chinese artist who does these really intense committed performance pieces. I learned about him in art school, and then it was brought up again in his book. But so he had a art piece where he lived for a whole year inside of an art gallery and just never left the room, and had very strict rules of what he could do. He had another art piece where for a whole year he punched a time card every hour on an hour in an art gallery. So he had to wake up every hour on the hour for the entire year, and could never go more than 30 minutes away from the art gallery because he always had to get back on the hour to punch his time card. Another art piece where he didn't go indoors for a whole year, including cars and trains and like any kind of enclosed transportation. So he does these really intense committed performance art pieces, and it like compares his experience doing these really isolating, like the extremes of isolation that are possible on the planet kind of performances, and compares that to like the Back to the Earth hippies in the 60s that decided to leave cities and go and make communes for themselves, and, you know, cites primary source documents of those things, talks about why that doesn't work. So it's really like, it is really like a conversation, because it's not like, it's kind of like, all right, well, here's the problems. Here's a potential solution. We could all leave society and get off Twitter and quit Facebook. And then she's like, but then here's what happens if we do that. And that doesn't maybe seem great. And then, yeah, I mean, the last chapter of the book is called Manifest Dismantling. And it's a, like, idea she proposes as the complement or the opposite of Manifest Destiny. And basically, she's basically advocating for selective and considered rollbacks of specific quote-unquote progress, and more importantly, a reevaluation of what we consider progress as a society, and kind of makes the point that what we consider progress is very often literally the thing that is destroying the environment, and that we kind of value, obviously, capital values like making money and, you know, making products and expanding reach and getting more customers and like driving numbers up as progress. But she also points out that like there's kind of a deeper like patriarchal sense of progress, where the things that in the historically have not been considered work, like taking care of a home, raising kids, having a garden, like things that were always considered like woman's work and therefore not work historically, those are the things that we as an entire civilization and society don't value at all. And we need to like kind of switch the lens and begin to realize that actually it's a valuable, it is a form of progress to take down this dam that was built, you know, with bad reasons and has kind of messed up the ecology of an entire area. Like, that may seem like a regression, but it's actually a different kind of progress that's important to value. So I don't know. It's a really good book. I will definitely reread it, because I kind of blew right through it in like 2.5 days, and I feel like I need to return to it. But book recommendation to all people out there. It is great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
If you read it, we can talk about it.
All right.
We can also talk about Hello from the Magic Tavern if you want. What are our friends Chunt up to? Chunt and
Don't
Usador.
Worry about it. Don't worry about it. We don't need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Ooh, Choo-Choo wants to talk about it. Chunt the Magic Badger.
Thomas the Tank Engine's a big fan of Chunt.
Yeah.
I love this show. You never know what you're gonna get.
It's you're always rolling the dice. It's truly a delight.
I know. Woo.
We can wrap it up there if you want.
No, I want to talk some more.
Okay, I'm here. I'm here for it.
I was trying to decide if I wanted to talk about exes or not.
A big question.
So, I walked by ex-boyfriend today and realized it's like exactly a year to the date that we broke up.
Oh my.
And it was just like an interesting experiment to be like, how do I feel? Like, let's remember where we were a year ago and what that felt like. Let's look at what has happened since then. It was also weird because this time we just did not interact at all. Like, not even like a wave. There's like a little bit of a half smile, kind of. But to me, that was disappointing because I'm like, I don't want to be one of those with anyone, you know? Like, I like to be on good terms with people if I can.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And it still, like, made my heartbeat go, thump, 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 to see him.
In an anxiety way or in a romantic way?
I don't know. How do you describe it? No. Like, I don't know how to describe it. I think when you see an ex, you're just kind of like, it's like anxiety. It's like, should I talk to him? I feel like I'm going to throw up. Like it's just the fact that there have been a lot of feelings there and like a lot of trauma and a lot of difficulty and just so many, like all of the types of feelings that you can have were like embodied in that relationship. So seeing that person, I think it kind of just like hits you in the face with all of those feelings all at once. And then like there's a physical reaction where your body is like heightened and I was like, and felt my heart racing. But then I'm like, okay, this happened the last time I saw him. Maybe this time, like, everything will die down a little bit faster. Maybe my heart rate will return to normal soon. And it did. And it did seem like it was a quicker recovery than last time.
Quicker come down.
Yeah, this is interesting. And I don't know. I mean, you seem like you're mostly friendly with your ex people in your life.
Well, yeah, I'm willing to talk about this. We talked about it at XO. I feel like you're basically giving me an opening to talk about it, but not forcing me to, which is very generous.
No, you don't need to talk about anything.
No, I'm happy to, but yeah. So I mean, something we talked about at XO is that one of my exes was there, and it is my lone ex of all my exes that does not like me. is mad at me and does not want to see me. At least I.
So there was no hello.
It's been many years. There was actually a hello, which I think was just because of awkwardness. But
yeah, I'll take it.
It's I'm like you. I just want everyone to like me, especially people that I've been extremely close to. And I'm also like I think we've mentioned. I'm not a big. I know some people that are big about like they'll just argue with whoever they're in. They'll get in fights. Like fighting is like part of their relationship. And
yeah.
I've never been in a relationship where I was like fighting is what we do. I just think it's so stupid. So like I won't get in fights with people, and so a combination of that and desperately wanting to be liked no matter what means that I don't have any exes that are mad at me, right? It's, I pretty much ended everything on good terms with everybody except for this one. And every time I see her, I have to like fight the urge to like try and make everything better. And it's been years, I mean years and years and years and years, because I've been married for almost, well, I've been here for 2 years. I've been living with Hillary for like 5 years, 6 years. It's been a long time. But I have to fight the urge to try and like make everything better. And I have to keep reminding myself that that's not an urge I have for her. That's a selfish urge I have to want to be liked. And it's probably not the best thing for her for me to come like crashing in and being like, let's make amends and talk about how everything's fine now, because I desperately need that for my fragile sense of self.
Yeah.
And so it's something I have to like keep reminding myself. Every time I see her, I'm like, nope. Let her be.
Yeah, I had that.
She did not ask for this.
I had that with a different ex recently where I reached the olive branch back out and was like, hey, I would like to be friends. And I was very explicit and I was very specific about what I wanted. And it was just friendship. And I was like, but you know what? If you want to stay in your corner, then that's fine. We don't have to meet in the middle on this. And they did kind of like reach back out, and we hung out a few times. But yeah, then they were like, I really don't, like, I meant it when I told you that I didn't think we could be friends, and you came back, and that was confusing for me, even though I was explicit and said, like, I just want to be buds, and they were just like, I don't think I can be that with you, and I was like, you know what, that's fine, totally okay. And then I felt a little bad. I was like, should I just not have reached out at all? Was that me being selfish? I don't know. Like, I think that sometimes they're, like, you date people because you like them. And then when you break up, a lot of the time you still like a lot of things about them. So it's just hard.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you just have to let the whole person go. You can't just, like, take the pieces you want.
Yeah. I don't know about for you, but I know it is for me. I have to just, like,
yeah.
And I thought about doing that exact thing, like, just send an email and be like, ignore this if you want. You can not think about this at all if you don't want to.
Totally.
But I still know that I'd be doing it for the wrong reasons, I think, because I feel like she is totally fine and does not need any kind of amends with me to, you know, live her life.
That's good of you to know that.
Plus, I feel like she's the aggrieved party in this situation for the most part.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's my job to stay out of the way, and if she wants to talk, then I'm here. But
yeah,
it does. It hurts to see her. It makes me sad because it reminds me of things I've done that I'm not like 100% thrilled with. Though, like, I didn't do anything horrible, but you know,
right?
It's a thing. It didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Obviously, if it resulted in somebody really not liking me and not wanting to ever see me again, So, yeah, it's upsetting, for sure. And I've been kind of, like, ruminating on it a little bit because that's what brains love to do. Find that thing, find that dumb thing you said 8 years ago and just replay it on a loop.
On a loop. Yeah, and I think that I've been thinking about it and feeling like that, like, man, I must be the only person who has people in their past like this. I must be the only one who's such an asshole that people don't even want to talk to me. And then you're like, no, I'm sure that, like, all of us have these people in our lives. But, like, you're not born perfect, and you have to learn shit. And sometimes you have to, like, learn shit the hard and bad way. And, yeah.
Yeah.
It sucks when you hurt the people you love.
Yeah, it's hard to be forgiving it to yourself sometimes, but.
Yeah.
Then
sometimes you forgive yourself. And, like, last night I went and gave myself a massage, and it was great.
You gave yourself a massage?
Well, I bought myself a massage with my own money.
I see.
Andy,
that's another thing I'm going to do once my fucking life insurance comes through, is to find a physical therapist that will do the medical kind of massage, whatever that one's called.
Physical therapy. I just go to the Chinese massage parlor in my neighborhood that does, like, foot reflexology. You got to look for the word reflexology, and that's how you know you're going to get a good massage that won't break the bank. Oh my gosh, this woman just, like, brutalized me. I think I have bruises, but it feels so good.
Could she, quote, handle all that jelly?
She could handle it.
As you've said in the past.
Yeah, and it's so funny because I didn't see her. I was, like, face down when she walked into the room. So in my head, I'm, like, building up my image of this woman and what she
looked
like.
Wait, you just were laying face down and never, like, made eye contact with the person that was touching you until the end?
Until the end.
That sounds very weird to me.
I know. Well, that's because they're all, like, in the back doing whatever. I don't know.
Is that the normal way you do this? I've never had a massage. Is that normally how it goes?
Not always. It's just that I, like, walked in and there was just one person at the front desk and he was like, let me see if someone's available. So, like, went to the back and then he was like, okay, go in this room and take all your clothes off and be face down. And I'm like, all right. So I do that. And then, this person came in and she just kept asking me if the pressure was okay. And I was like, yes. And so then I came out and she was not what I imagined. She just looks like the sweetest person. Like, just looking at her and knowing that she had the amount of strength in her hands that she does was, like, jarring.
Well practiced.
Yeah. Good at what she does.
Practice makes perfect.
Ask for her next time. Anyways, go get yourself a massage.
Yeah. Once I feel like that's
That's an important part of the exercise cycle that people don't talk about, is, like, using a foam roller or...
I do foam roll occasionally, both at home and at the gym, but I am, like, I would say 4 out of 5 days I'm just in pain because of muscle soreness from going to the gym. So I would love for somebody. Also, everyone that I know that goes to massages, they always have some like, oh, the massage person looked at my body and told me all these like secret facts about my body that I didn't know. I want that. You know, like people will be like, oh, you know, you carry your weight on your left side, or you're, you know, like all these things that you never think about. That person who is explicitly trained to read a body like a book can be like, oh, you're doing this thing wrong. You should.
That sounds expensive.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's covered by insurance. That's the brilliant part.
That's great. If you can get your insurance to cover it, then fuck yeah.
Anyway, everything hurts all the time. I'm getting old. Yeah. And I keep lifting weights like an idiot.
This will be the story of our lives.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, I feel good after XOXO. Life is great. Everything's exciting.
I'm very happy for you, Linda.
Yeah. I'm so glad I got to spend all that time with you.
And then
Jinx.
We get to, I feel like these calls have like are imbued with even more meaning now that we've spent that much time together. So that's very nice. And yeah. We do have a sponsor this week for Earth to Linda. I teased this when we were recording live, IRL, on the floor of your Airbnb. You may recall a while ago, we got a very generous $20 donation from Howard Yu. Shout out to Howard again. And and I pointed out that Howard was the biggest donor of all time to Earth to Linda. And then we got, just last week, a even greater donation of $21 from repeat donor Daniel AG. Daniel stepping
Daniel.
It up, calling out Howard, basically saying, Howard, beat this, you chump.
Daniel, he just like prices right, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. $1, Bob.
Right in.
$1.
Yeah. $21.
So, Daniel, can't thank you enough. I hope you did it in a spirit of generosity and not a spirit of spiting Howard. But you know what? If you did it in a spirit of spiting Howard, that cash still works, baby. That thing still goes ka-ching. So thank you for helping us bring Earth to Linda to you.
And Daniel, when you hear this, text me a little pig emoji, and let's see if I remember why you're sending that to me, or if I will have forgotten why. If I say, what are you talking about?
Why you call me a pig, Daniel? Anyway, if you want to be like Daniel and sponsor an episode of Earth to Linda, you don't have to send $21. You can just send $4 to me through Venmo or Square Cash or PayPal. I'm just Andy Mangold in all the places. And yeah, and do it only if you're a person and not a business. If you're a business, why are you listening to a podcast? Podcasts can't listen to businesses. Wait, vice versa. Businesses can't listen to podcasts.
Nope.
Yeah.
Unless they have like a thick Sonos or something. I don't know.
Linda, good luck at your improv class.
Thank you. Go get on a train.
I'll give you a location and an occupation. You're a doctor at the DMV. Go.
Hello, I'm a doctor, and I would like my car title renewed.
Wow.
Do you like how I changed my voice into a man's voice?
Transported.
Like,
that was extremely sexist, first of all.
Which sucks, because that's just like my body. Like, that's what improv will show you about yourself.
It's all of your buried biases.
Implicit biases that you didn't even know about.
The mother was the doctor.
No time to filter yourself.
Anyway, I was transported to another place. Thank you for that brilliant performance. I'm very excited for you to graduate and then move on to SNL. And I'll get to say I knew you in the
early days. Ooh, my train is right on time.
All right. Have fun, Linda.
Bye, Andy.
Bye.